Hello again. You're listening to the Health and Happiness Show on Gallatin Valley Radio, KGVM 95.9 FM, and KGVM.org on the Internet. We appreciate the support of the Public Education Committee, the Montana Psychological Association, and of KGVM, who produces the program. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. While we emphasize topics of mental health, we deal with all areas of potential health and happiness. Now, Dr. Suzanne will introduce today's guest and topics.
In a Montana survey a few years back, one out of five people reported they needed counseling due to mental health problems. Goodness, that's a lot of people. And we do also need many more therapists in Montana. But imagine for a moment if your therapist weighed 1,500 pounds and was hairy all over and snorted a lot. This therapy is relatively new, being only about 2,000 years old when Hippocrates first mentioned horse therapy. And we are so pleased to have with us today some very caring folks who ride horses and provide horse therapy. Welcome, ladies. Please introduce yourselves and tell us about your work. And tell us, what is horse therapy? And maybe we could start with McLean.
Hi, yes, my name is McLean Dubay, and I am the owner of Evergreen Equine Therapy. I provide equine-assisted psychotherapy to individuals, including kids, adults, families. Our therapy looks like providing a clinical experiential modality for those experiencing either anxiety, depression, or experiences of trauma.
And to clarify for me, I believe you said that you have a background of study in the mental health arena.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last part of that.
What are your credentials? I think she was asking.
Okay. Hi, I'm Claire Bruner. I am the Adaptive Horsemanship Director at Eagle Mount Bozeman. And I am an adaptive riding instructor through PATH International, which is the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship. While I am not a therapist, I provide more of the physical aspect of the benefit of horsemanship. And here at Eagle Mount, we provide recreational therapies for folks with cognitive and physical disabilities, and young people with cancer.
I consider that highly professional and helpful. How marvelous. And it is therapy.
And McLean, you said you are a social worker too, is that correct?
I am not.
Yes.
McLean, yeah.
I think that was Claire speaking.
Exactly.
Yes, I apologize.
Oh no,
thought you said Claire.
We were just switching back and forth. Everything is great. McLean, what?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
We have one other person with us today who does a different type of horsemanship, which also has grand and great benefits. Renee, welcome. Tell us about you and what you do with horses.
Well, my name is Renee Daniels Mantle, and I am the founding master of the Big Sky Hounds, which is a fox hunting club. It's one of the only Western fox hunting clubs that is sanctioned by the Masters of Fox Hounds Association of America, which is our governing body for hunting, the sport of fox hunting. And fox hunting is an equine sport where mounted riders follow a pack of hounds following scent.
Wow, that's very British, isn't it?
It is a very traditional sport.
And royalty indulges in that quite a bit, I understand. So how did you come to decide to have fox hunting on your schedule, Renee?
Well, that's a long story, so I'll try to make it short. We owned a very large-scale horse leasing operation, and our horses were leased out to organizations like therapeutic riding centers, and also dude ranches and guest ranches, trail ride outfits, kids camps. And about 15 years ago, we had a group of fox hunters that came out and leased our horses for the event, and we fell in love with it and somehow ended up with some hounds. So we started that club about 15 years ago.
That's a great combination, horses and dogs and people. And so that gives us yet another aspect of the great health advantages of, first of all, just being outdoors is extremely health developing. And then working with animals is, and especially horses, can be quite calming. I'm not sure about the foxes, but, and tell us what happens to the fox once you catch him, please, Renee.
Well, most often we don't catch them. That isn't always the intent. And a lot of times we're just chasing scent. So there are several different types of fox hunts. We in Montana chase live coyote. I've never caught one. My pack of hounds has never caught one. I think in line with your therapy of horses, we provide an opportunity for people to get together and have an activity. And our therapists are four-legged.
They sure are. That's amazing.
And McLean, earlier, before we went on the air, you were talking about how horses sense feelings. Can you talk about that some more?
Yes, of course. Yeah, so horses are incredibly intuitive of our emotions. And in our therapy sessions, we really encourage our clients to be authentic with what they're feeling. So often in culture, we're told we need to feel a certain way around horses to be safe in our bodies. But the reality is, horses are really welcoming to different emotions. What scares them most is when we try and mask or cover what we're feeling. And so horses provide a really authentic experience for our clients because there's almost a level of accountability, right? They can sense that in us and feel it, and then help us regulate whatever emotions are coming up for us.
Well, thank you. Claire, can you tell us some changes you've seen in people who have engaged in equine therapy?
Oh, certainly. And to reiterate, Eagle Mouth does not provide equine therapy. We provide adaptive horsemanship.
Okay.
I just want to make that clear because none of us are therapists.
I hear you. Okay.
I would have to argue that you really are therapists, just of a different kind. Okay, go ahead.
Sure. Yes, is certainly beneficial both mentally and physically. And I'd love to talk about some of the physical benefits and being on a horse mimics the walking gait of humans. Mm-hmm. Their movement kind of stimulates micro movements in the rider's core, strengthens their muscles, making it then more stable when they do walk. Texas A&M has completed a wonderful study on the benefits of riding for folks with Parkinson's. And their conclusion is that as little as 20 minutes a week on a horse provides week-long improvement in balance and stability.
That's
which is
excellent.
So amazing. And we have had folks here that have Parkinson's, and besides the benefits that they gain after riding, during riding, it's freedom. It's empowerment. And they have stated that they don't feel that stiffness and pain when they're on the horse, which is just so thrilling.
And, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, also, one of the first research studies about equine therapy from the Journal for Creativity and Mental Health, they found that equine-assisted psychotherapy increased self-esteem, increased self-respect, improved adjustment to routines and guidelines, improved focus, created less stressful friendships, and reduced aggression.
Yes, it has wonderful benefits, connecting all parts of your body. It helps with sensory integration, with your mood, your motivation. And like McLean was saying, the horse is a prey animal and they rely on each other in their herd to protect each other. So they have about 17 different facial expressions that they communicate with. They're very sensitive to what we're doing as well. Horses can read our facial expressions and they take that input and react to that. Also, they are aware of our heart rate, our breathing, our muscle tension, and all of that affects that horse. And you can get that immediate feedback as well.
Yeah.
We do, yeah, primarily what I have seen is really boosting that level of confidence in our riders.
Yes.
And also we offer ground lessons as well. Also a great confidence builder to be able to lead a 1,200 pound animal around just by a lead rope. Mm-hmm. It's really inspiring.
And a licensed clinical social worker, Kit Mulner, says that clients feel they've achieved something on their own rather than being told to do something by someone else. And a 1,500 pound animal responds the way you want him to because you were able to focus. So you've accomplished something. And this sense of accomplishment can feel significant for anyone, she states, especially someone who struggles with ADHD. In those moments, they're getting instant feedback from their horse and learning how to develop trust, communicate effectively, and how to work toward meeting a personal goal or milestone.
That is so true, Suzanne. One of our goals here is let them do the buckle. And what that translates to is even if that person has difficulty and it may take a while to get that buckle buckled, let them do it. They're never going to get a sense of accomplishment if we do everything for them. And
yes,
we look at our participants' abilities first and foremost, and that's what we adapt to.
I'd like to ask each of you how you got into the area of interest with horses. Renee, would you tell us how you got interested?
Well, there's something called horse crazy girls, and I think we might all understand what that means. So I think there is something naturally drawing. There are a great portion of young girls that are drawn naturally to horses, and I was one of them. And on the extreme opposite end of what Claire is speaking of is fox hunting. So
We represent sort of the adrenaline side, the high adventure side. It's all of the things about horsemanship at a very, very rapid, in the moment, novel experience. And I think that everything that is being said from both McLean and from Claire applies. We just do it in a group setting where there's a bunch of horse crazy girls that get together and also feel that camaraderie and that connection and the opportunity to be in an in-the-moment situation that is very, very fast and pushes us all just a little bit past what we thought we could do. And that is thrilling and draws us back all the time.
Wow. McLean, how'd you get into the field?
Yeah, I actually did not have the opportunity to grow up with horses, but always adored animals. And I came into horsemanship through a really unique avenue. A lot of my studies in both my undergrad and in my master's were around experiential modalities to therapy. And so, you know, I'd always been an experiential learner and teacher. I led wilderness trips. I led a lot of kids and art and, you know, experiential activities. And so when someone introduced me to the idea of having horses in therapy, it just made so much sense. I really fell in love with it really quickly. I saw how effective it was, and you know, I was all in, and thankfully had a lot of really good supervision and training and support in learning horses. But me, myself, I must admit, it's been quite the humbling journey to learn about horses through a therapy lens versus a riding lens. And so I am still a very beginner rider, but I do think I understand and know horses really well because I learned through that therapy approach.
Wow. You know, I think one question I'd like for the audience to hear the answer to is, when I think of horsemanship, I visualize old Western movies where they're just racing to beat the band and riding those horses up and down hillsides, etc. Does equine therapy consist of riding horses, or what does it actually consist of?
Yeah, so I think we get that question a lot, and we do have what we call rhythmic riding. And so very similar to what Claire was describing in adaptive riding, the clinical therapy version of that is what we call rhythmic riding. It includes a client who is bareback on a horse and being led by our equine specialist. And the therapist is leading both the client and the horse through a regulation activity. The bilateral movement of the horse underneath the client really helps the client go from a place of fight or flight to more regulation. This can be a place of processing. This can be a way of regulating in distress. But the unique experience is that there's co-regulation occurring. The horse and the client are feeling that regulation. But most times, our therapy sessions are a lot more driven around what we call liberty work or groundwork. And so most of our interactions during therapy sessions are helping the client experience a relational interaction with the horse. We find that the more authentic that experience can be, the more impactful it is on the client. And so a lot of times we're using pressure and release between the client and the horse to either invite closeness, to invite movement, or to, in the end goal, create a join up, which is when the horse follows the client with no lead rope, no halter, purely from that connection that the client worked for with the horse in a security of trust.
That's great. I wanted to also ask Claire how she got into horses.
Well, I too grew up adoring horses, but unfortunately did not have the access to them. And fast forward many years, I started volunteering at a Therapeutic Writing Center, fell in love with it, and said, hey, how do I do this? So I went ahead and went through the process to get certified, and 15 years later, still doing it, and I love it.
Oh, what a fabulous avocation. Yeah, so a typical session might be grooming the horse, walking the horse, talking to the horse as a therapeutic intervention. And so not necessarily having to get up and ride the horse, befriending the horse might be just as effective. Is that, do I have that correctly?
Yes, absolutely. And so, yeah, we find that most of our clients actually gain more through their experience on the ground with the horse, because like you said, it's just such an authentic relationship of their own. The horses that we work with, I always like to point out, for equine-assisted psychotherapy, we try to work with horses who are really authentic to themselves, meaning they are not, you know, well-trained horses who are going to have very predictable behaviors. Instead, sometimes we are working with horses who are a little younger, maybe even a little bit more personality, because that's a lot more authentic to our relationships with people that we interact with in the world. And so my primary horse that is in sessions is a Mustang. And so as you can imagine, he offers a lot of personality. He has his own experience of trauma himself. And so we're able to see his patterns in relating with others. He presents with a little bit of an avoidant attachment. And we can see that with clients, and clients can recognize that, name that, and that might affect what it feels like for them to have a relationship with him. And that's very similar to our day-to-day experience with other humans.
Wow. And from the American Psychological Association, an article, they said, because horses have long been domesticated and live alongside humans, it's thought they are especially attuned to humans' emotions and nonverbal signals, and that they respond accordingly. While engaging in activities with the horse, the client will attempt to recognize how the horse's behaviors might be due to their own emotional signals. A client who is angry or anxious, for example, may see the horse pull away or otherwise respond negatively. This mirroring process is thought to help the client identify what they're feeling and potentially modify their emotions for the better, all in a non-judgmental environment. Equine specialists may also promote the practice of mindfulness, or focusing on the present moment when the client is interacting with the horse.
I wanted to.
That is all very true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask.
For sure.
Yeah. And a shout out to our horses. They are staff members. We could not do any of this wonderful work without them. And it is a very stressful job. Some people think that they want to donate their horse to a program because they'll have an easy time of it. Carrying an unbalanced, unregulated rider is very difficult. And our horses, they come into the barn, they're ready to work, and they are so special for that.
And I think I can't imagine anything more empowering for a person with a physical disability than getting on top of a 1,500-pound creature, a very nice, warm-hearted creature, and being able to command and direct and interact with that big, beautiful friend.
Indeed, it is amazingly empowering. You know, if you think about someone who has mobility issues and may see their world from a lower angle, being using a wheelchair, and to be able to have the freedom to get on a horse and enjoy that movement is just spectacular.
Wow.
I wanted to ask Renee that, do you observe what's being discussed here in your riders and their horses?
It's an interesting group of people that you've put together here. As I've been listening, I've noticed that we've all progressed through the stages, starting with McLean's stage with just beginning to read horse behavior and creating that connection, on to Claire's experience where it is a little bit more about riding and horsemanship and that sort of a connection, to what we do as experienced horse people. And in a lot of ways, what they are introducing to people is something that we have all gone through and we're experiencing daily in our horse ownership and in our horse relationship. And at that more advanced stage, when we're doing something as exciting as, you know, riding towns or, you know, being on a horse drive or going up into the mountains on a pack trip, I think that many of us will progress to a higher quest for knowledge about the relationship between horse and human. In fact, there's a really great book by Dr. Janet Jones called Horse Brain, Human Brain, and it talks about the neuroscience of horsemanship. And if you want to get that deep into it, from my perspective, it's very interesting because it goes very into depth about how a horse thinks versus how a human thinks and how you can come together with horsemanship, which is very fascinating to me to see this progression from McLean up to something as exciting as fox hunting.
That reminds me of a small book I read many, many years ago. It's called There's a Horse in the House. Have any of you read that book? The lady who wrote it brought a little baby pony in and put it next to her fireplace because it was born in midwinter. I don't know what happened to its mother, but she fed the little pony, the baby, and kept it right with her in the house because it was cold outside. And as the horse grew bigger and older, they became such fast friends that she couldn't put the horse out in the stable. And she talks about problem solving. They had to rebuild all the floors to carry the extra weight of 1,500 pounds. They put a double door so the horse could come in and go out. The horse was potty trained, never had an accident in the house, and was their best friend. And that book is called There's a Horse in the House. Can you see
that's
that, ladies?
It's an interesting story because I was just reading in this very book about a horse that was in cross ties in a barn who the handler had a baby monitor so that she could hear her child in the house. And when the child would speak very nonsensical, repetitive words, the horse became transfixed with just listening to that human voice, that baby voice, as if they were speaking something that we couldn't even understand. Absolutely transfixed.
Oh my goodness.
No wonder these
wow
great big guys are so helpful. They help with addiction treatment, ADHD, veterans. There's a study showing veterans benefit very much. People with physical differences are empowered. These horses might be some of our most powerful therapists. What do you think, ladies?
I think so. And we've often supplied horses and in fact conducted veteran experiences. And in the case with our organization, we
we brought veterans in and offered them this high adrenaline experience where they were very, very and these are guys that are suffering from PTSD and they've been through pretty serious combat. And we offered them an opportunity to very quickly learn horsemanship and packing in a 2-day horsemanship sessions. And then they went up into the mountains for backcountry real experience. And I can't remember what they called it, but they called it trauma therapy. In a lot of ways, they put them back into those initiating experiences, and then they worked through it with the horse.
That's just astoundingly helpful and wonderful. Hmm. Well, I would like to ask, the training, you can be trained by the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship, International, PATH, International, and they certify mental health professionals and equine specialists who practice equine therapy. So what are the prerequisites to getting this certification for horses and support? Would that be that you have to already be familiar with horses? Or could somebody hearing this who hadn't worked with horses before just come in and get trained fully?
Well, the first step is to look at their website and look at all of the steps that you need to take to be certified. You can certainly start without much horse knowledge. It's just going to take you longer. With the equine specialist in mental health and learning, that particular certification is geared toward you being the advocate for the horse in a therapeutic session, being a psychological session. You are the horse handler, and you are there to recognize what the horse is emoting and whether that horse is participating in that communication with the patient as well. And then if you want to become a certified therapeutic riding instructor, also you don't have to start with horse knowledge. Same thing, it's gonna take you longer, but you need to get many hours demonstrating horse handling. You need 25 hours of working with people with disabilities, and you need to student teach, and then you need to shoot a video demonstrating that you know how to teach walk, trot, canter.
Wow.
Well, that's usually done, much of that work is done independently, but for the, obviously for the student teaching, you need to be in contact with a PATH Premier accredited center and work with them to be able to get those student teaching hours as well.
Thank you. That sounds doable. Person with motivation could certainly work toward that, and makes me wonder,
yes.
McLean, you are a therapist. Do you could you use volunteers to support with your work? And if so, what would the requirements be, or would you be able to train those people to come and help?
Unfortunately, we do not really take on volunteers for our work, and that's because we do have the confidentiality element a part of our practice since it is a therapeutic intervention. And so ethically, we are unable to invite others into that time in the form of volunteers. And so we don't really have any volunteers at this time. I could imagine that in future opportunities for more therapeutic camp events or group therapies, there might be more of an option to include others in assisting with those events. But yeah, unfortunately, we can't have any additional personnel.
I actually wasn't thinking of the actual therapy session, but maybe volunteers who love horses or would love to learn more about them to come and help with the cleaning, feeding, all of that. The other parts that require a lot of work, I would assume, with horses. That was kind of what I was visualizing. We all know therapy sessions need to be private and protected, but getting a horse ready for all this and keeping the horses well, happy, and ready must take quite a bit of effort, I would assume.
It sure does. And, you know, I think it looks different at different barns. The first barn that I worked with, you know, we maintained and took care of all of our horses on our own, and it was a therapeutic barn. And so in that sense, there was a lot of opportunity for volunteers. Since starting my own practice, it's a much smaller operation. And so my horse is actually currently being boarded by a boarding facility that is really generous to support and encourage our therapy opportunities. But they also provide a lot of care for our horse that's included in that. And gosh, the dream is one day to have a space of my own for my horse and for my clients. And I think that's everybody's dream, but that would invite the opportunity to include a lot more of the community and volunteers in that time.
That I can see. And I hope you keep moving toward that beautiful goal, McLean.
Yeah.
I have a question I want to ask all of you regarding the intelligence of horses. Humans unfortunately think that we're the only ones that have a high level of intelligence, and most of the time we would question that, I think, and looking around us and in ourselves. But dolphins are said to have, and porpoises, high levels of intelligence, elephants, and on down, horses, of course. Suzanne and I have been watching a series, a two-part series about honeybees. And believe it or not, a little species with a brain the size of a pinhead can do some amazing things. Can you all tell me about intelligent behaviors you've seen in your horses? Who will go first?
I think over many, many years with horses, my entire lifetime, it still astounds me. And again, I would love to have the experience that both Claire and McLean offer, to remember back to when I hadn't had that experience and I don't have that knowledge. But I can tell you that throughout many years, we've often said to one another, I think horses read your mind, because there is a communication that over time you realize is not spoken, it's not physical. We ran about 400 head of horses, and we would gather them off of the range, two of us. And I can communicate with those horses standing on, riding a horse from half a mile off if they could see me. And I don't know how that communication travels like that. But any of us who have worked with them can see that the communication and the intelligence of this animal and the very unique connection that I think, in my case, horses and humans have, and then hounds, dogs and humans have. It's very different, I think, than any other animals, or at least maybe we're more aware of it. But that communication transcends even human communication, which we have kind of narrowed down to physical and verbal in a lot of ways. Once you deal with horses and you realize that it's a world that you can't explain.
That's so true, Renee, that...
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's not necessarily seeing a horse and saying, oh, look at that really smart thing that that horse did. It's exactly what Renee was talking about. It's that connection that is something we as humans have certainly lost. It's a deeper connection. It's very subtle. And I might go as far as saying primitive. It's on a very basic level. And it's really beautiful to be able to pare down to those feelings.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. I have here a writing instructor with a background in clinical psychology working with veterans. She noted a lot of them have said that after what they've been through with their PTSD and depression, they never thought they'd be able to bond with someone again and feel that personal connection. But with their horse, they're feeling that.
Yeah.
McLean?
That is.
I was wondering.
That is what we're looking for.
I was wondering if you see the horse's sensitivity to the special issues of the rider and this, those who have psychological issues. Who would like Who would like to respond to that?
would you mind repeating what you just said? I apologize. I missed part
either
of that.
McLean or Claire or Renee, any of you, do you see the horse showing a special awareness, let's say, of a special disability of the person who is riding or working with him or her, either psychological or physical? Is the horse sensitive to it?
Oh, certainly. And when that horse eventually becomes kind of deadened to that, and that will happen, because like I said, horses, this is a very stressful job for them. The average is about 2 to 3 years for horses to be in a therapeutic or adaptive program. We're lucky here at Eagle Mount, most of ours average around 7 years. But yes, they 100% react to that. When a rider is off balance, a horse will stop and they'll wait. Or if they're sensing that that rider is not fully focused on them, they'll stop. Most of our horses are really, really good babysitters.
Wow. So the intuition is not just psychological, but it's also physical. They intuit how your safety even.
Oh, definitely. Yep. I can speak to that as well. We had many trail ride businesses, and I remember one instance when I first realized that, and we would take 20 horses with 20 novice riders on a 2-hour trail ride. So it took a very special type of horse to be in our string. And I remember once we had this big old thoroughbred named Dollar, and he had a little girl on his back. And from a guide's perspective, sometimes you don't interact with them individually, you interact with the string as a whole. And this old horse just kept kind of drifting off to the left as we were riding along. And then finally he just stopped in the middle of the ride, shutting down a 20-person trail ride. And when we rode up to him, we realized that the little girl had fallen asleep. And he kept trying to move himself underneath her so that she didn't fall off. And when she got really loose in the saddle, he just stopped and waited for her to wake up or somebody to rescue her.
Oh, my.
Wow. Okay. That's a golden example.
Yes.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I wonder, for people listening, if each of you could take a moment and just say where you are and how to reach you if somebody felt like they had a family member that might benefit from all of these wonderful possibilities. Could we start maybe with Claire?
Okay, well, Eagle Mount Bozeman is a wonderful place for adaptive recreation. This is one of the few centers in the country that provides not only the horsemanship, but we have a rec department that does skiing in the winter and all the summer activities in the summer. And we have an aquatics program. We also have a arts and horticulture program. We have an amazing garden. And in the arts program, we have all kinds of wonderful art projects, a theater program. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but pretty much if you want to do it, you can do it with Eagle Mount. Horsemanship runs year-round. We have an indoor arena. We also have an outdoor trail and outdoor arena. And if you would like to get involved, you can go to eaglemount.org and head to the participant tab. And then there you will fill out some paperwork, and then we will get you in for an assessment. And that assessment will involve coming to the barn and the Horsemanship Education Center, and we'll get to know each other. You'll meet a horse, and then we'll decide what horse works best for you and what kind of lesson works best for you. Also, if you're interested in volunteering, also head to eaglemount.org and fill out that volunteer application, and then we will get you trained and ready to help in lessons or to help with the endless chores that are involved in a barn.
Ah, yes. That would be some fun volunteering in my book. Yeah. That was great. Renee, tell us how to reach your group if a person would love to go on a fox hunt with you all.
Well, Big Sky Hounds is one of the only fox hunting clubs that will allow you to come without being recommended by a member or without being a member. We just welcome everyone. And you can first be introduced to us by going to bigskyhounds.com.
And that leaves McLean. How do people reach you when they have a family member or friend or loved one who needs some support?
Absolutely. So they can go ahead to our website, which is evergreenequinetherapy.com, and there'll be a contact form to fill out, and that can be done either by the client or their parent, just letting us know a little bit about what they're looking for out of a therapy session. And we do our therapy sessions out of Four Peaks Ranch, and that's very close to town, just in Bear Canyon. And so we are really excited to be able to offer flexible times for those therapy sessions, and look forward to doing some more therapy art camps in the summer.
Oh, that sounds great. So do you all, do any of you provide the training that we've talked about? Or where would one have to go for equine training in this area?
Well, at Eagle Mount, if you come and volunteer with us, we will start you with the basics, everything you need to know for ground handling a horse, tacking a horse. We do not offer riding lessons. But we can certainly get you on the path to knowing everything about horse care and horse handling. And also, being a premier accredited center, we can work with you to get certified through PATH as well.
Okay.
Well, I can speak a little bit about the therapy journey too. The training does look a lot different from a clinical perspective. We personally do not, and you know, some therapists do, but my practice, and as well as my supervisors, have received training through Natural Life Kinship instead of PATH. PACT was created primarily for adaptive therapeutic services, whereas natural life kinship is kind of the first modality to be specific to mental health. And so they have a lot of overlap in their principles, but natural life kinship is going to have just a little bit more of a foundation in mental health and clinical care. And so that's where I have received my training and in the process of becoming certified. And so for a therapist that's interested in providing equine therapy, the biggest thing would be, you know, going through that training as well as finding a supervisor that can assist them in, you know, and is willing to supervise providing equine assisted therapy, which is a little bit harder to come by, unfortunately, in our valley. And so I'd be happy to connect to some resources there, as I've been really fortunate to come about those connections during my time here.
Wonderful. There's a kind of a difficult, awkward question coming up here. In reading about this, we find that we need more research before insurance companies will buy into the value of equine therapy, and most insurances don't pay for therapy. Now, because you are a counselor, McLean, maybe that would be covered, but are the costs prohibitive, or is there perhaps a scholarship fund? Maybe that's something a volunteer could provide. Talk to us a little bit about the expense of maintaining and using horses.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think you're spot on in that anyone who has had time around horses knows that they are not cheap to care for. And so we encounter that a lot in just the feasibility of providing equine therapy. We have the accessibility to reimburse through insurance. That is something that I have done in the past with previous providers. Currently, I have chosen to operate my business as closely to a nonprofit as possible. And so I am currently not reimbursing through insurance. However, clients have the opportunity to submit their session to receive a super bill, and oftentimes insurance will reimburse that for them. But by doing so, that opens the door for me to provide sliding scale options. And so we received significant donations this past year that allowed us to provide sliding scale session fees for our clients and to help alleviate some of those financial barriers for clients. Because as you mentioned, the horse care is expensive, but then also the cost for a session includes multiple parts. And so we pay to rent a space to hold the session. We also pay two individuals within that session, both the equine therapist, myself, and our equine specialist, who is there to provide safety. And then, as you can imagine, of course, there's those overhead costs too that often come up within our practice. But all that to say, we do have a scholarship fund that we hope to continue growing so that we can create more accessibility for such a unique treatment.
Absolutely. Mm. So, Renee, in order to join your group, does one need a horse, and or do you have horses that they could borrow or rent, or does everyone there dwell in horsemanship and have his or her own horse?
Most people have their own horses. We do also offer horses for lease, and there is a fee involved. We call it a capping fee, which is the money that you pay to ride with us, which helps to support the hounds. Or you can become a member, which is a yearly membership and allows you to ride with any of the hunts. And our hunt is located in Three Forks, Montana. our season starts in the fall when the crops go out of the field, and then it ends in the spring. So we're just coming up on our closing hunts this month. And that's when the crops go back in the field, because as you can imagine, we're riding across farms and ranches. So during the season, you might hunt here in Three Forks, and then midwinter, our hounds travel to Tennessee and they hunt in the south. But that would allow you, your membership would allow you to hunt anywhere in the country that our hounds are hunting.
Hmm. Can I ask a really dumb question? How is it that a dog or those creatures you use to chase a fox know to chase the fox? How does the fox know to run away? If your dogs are like our dogs, they might come up and want to scratch under the chin instead of going off and running after something. Is there a lot of training for the horses and for the dogs?
There's a lot of instinct in the dogs. They're okay. Bred for their scenting capabilities. And so they are literally overrun. They are single-mindedly set on following a scent. And scenting clinics are fascinating when you learn about all of the millions of scents that go through a hound's nose to have them hone in on a scent that you want them to pursue versus one that you don't want them to pursue is astounding. But there's a communication between the huntsman who directs the hound to a proper scent, and then there's training that our hounds give the younger generations of hounds. So we know that we can chase coyote or fox, but we can't chase deer or house dogs or cats. And so they learn that through communicating by a horn. We call our hounds with horn calls. And then oftentimes we'll put our young hounds in with our old hounds and they'll kind of coach them along. And then as far as the quarry, that's an interesting question. I find it fascinating that for me anyway, I hunt the same country, you know, year after year after year. I know my coyotes, like I know my hounds, they have names and I've watched them raise pups and we introduce our young entry to their newer, younger coyote pups. And it's a game in many ways. I've seen some amazing things happen between, they're both canines, you know, and I've seen amazing things happen between a hound pursuing a coyote, where the coyote will actually wait for the hound to catch up. The coyotes have an incredible advantage. And they'll wait for the hound, or they'll know exactly where the end of our country is, and they know we have to stop our hounds at that point. And so they'll literally jump up on top of a ridge and just chatter back at them, almost calling them out. And I've also seen in the spring when the mating season is happening, I've seen my hounds literally stop a coyote, and the coyote and the hounds will touch noses, the coyote will lay over, and then the hounds will come back to me. It is literally a game to them.
Wow, this is so fun, they say. Wow.
And I bet the horses like it as well, right?
Yes. If you have a horse that doesn't like it, you'll know it. But most of these horses, they're very well conditioned and very well trained to enjoy it. And the people are enjoying it. It's a really wonderful bond between the two.
We want to thank you all for being here. Unfortunately, our time is coming to an end. We need to have you all back pretty soon here to tell us more.
Absolutely, you guys. Thank you so much for being on.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Remind the audience, this is Gallatin Valley Radio, KGVM 95.9, KGVM.org. This program will air on Monday nights at 7, Thursday mornings at 9. And we just appreciate all this new knowledge. So goodbye to our guests and to the listening audience. We'll see you next time.